Hello and welcome, welcome, welcome to this edition of Side Retired, the MLB podcast. It is Dylan joined alongside James and Jack, and today we have a very special episode for you guys. We have a special guest from the New York Post. Ken Davidoff is joining us today. We'll be talking a little Mets, a little Yankees. He'll even break down a little bit of the Hall of Fame ballot with us, which he has a vote for this year on a very interesting group of players. So before we get into things, James, Jack, Mr. Davidoff, how are you guys doing today?
Great, great. Please call me Ken.
Will do. James, Jack, I know you guys are Yankee fans. You probably have a lot of questions on your team. I'm a Mets fan, so I have some stuff there. I know the Mets are all of a sudden doing a lot of things that are pretty interesting. We stole, Eric Chavez stole in quotes from the Yankees. I guess we can start there since that's the most recent thing. What are your thoughts on sort of, I guess, hiring Buck Showalter and how that might be changing the Mets? And now apparently the coaching staff is coming into form.
Yeah, they had to hire Buck Showalter largely because of Mickey Callaway's and Luis Rojas's failures. I mean, that's the, you know, if you look at the last four World Series have been won by first-time managers, right? Cora in 18, Martinez in 19, Roberts in 20, if you discount, he managed like a game of Padres interim. And then 21 was, Snicker. Well, he's an older guy, but it's still his first MLB manager job. And then you go back to 2017, it was A.J. Hinch, who was in his second job, but certainly wasn't hired by the Astros as a returning champion. You know, his first opportunity with Arizona was a failure. So I think it's dangerous to look at the idea of, oh, like these guys, Espada and Cachara, they couldn't have done it. I think they might have been fine, but I do understand the rationale in going with Buck. And you know, Buck is a great manager. He really is. He has done amazing work. He's one World Series appearance short of serious Hall of Fame consideration. And I get why they hired him. Of course, it's not guaranteed to work, but I get it. Then you talk about the coaching staff. I like what they've done from what we know, and the retention of Hefner, and then Wayne Kirby, Joey Cora, and now Eric Chavez. So that is four guys with major league playing experience. And even though I'm all in on the analytics, I do think there's real value in having coaches who have been there and done that.
And yeah, I think you're talking about like this new Mets culture that I think we've seen last year, at least obviously the anniversary today of Francisco Lindor. And I think obviously him at a lockdown, it's not a super big headline, but obviously absence, lots of big signings. Obviously Juan Soto's brother is just signed. I mean, I know it seems like the scouting report with him isn't as detailed as some of these other guys. So do you think this is clearly just like, okay, Juan, we have your brother 2024. You want to come try to play with him? So I mean, what's your thoughts on that? Is this really just like, do they think they have Juan Soto 2.0? Or is it just, okay, do you want to come play with your brother when you hit free agency?
I think it's somewhere in the middle there. I mean, yeah, my understanding is he's going to get around $50,000. And you know, just for context, Juan Soto got $1.5 million. So, you know, Elian Soto is not regarded as a premium talent down in the Dominican Republic. He has the bloodlines, obviously. You're not wrong. It can't hurt to have Juan Soto's brother in the organization when you talk about Juan Soto being a free agent in three more years.
Yeah, James, do you have anything on the Mets or do you want to transition to your team?
I guess we could transition to the Yankees. Obviously, a big debate now within the Yankees fan base is why haven't the Yankees locked up Aaron Judge? What do you think of that? Why have the Yankees waited so long? And do you think that we could see an extension coming? As soon as the lockdown is over and closer towards the start of the season.
Yeah, it really shouldn't be a debate. The answer is because they're waiting for this new collective bargaining agreement, and they're waiting for to know what they would be up against in terms of the luxury tax thresholds, in terms of revenue sharing, all that. So, you know, really, it would have been silly to lock him up prior to then. What's the difference? You know, I mean, he's open to it. I do think they'll find a way to get this done before opening day.
And would, I guess, a Judge extension sort of preclude them from going after Correa because they already have the big Stanton contract, they have the big Cole contract. Presumably Judge would get another long-term deal like that. So would adding, I know Correa is probably looking in that same Seager range, so would they be willing to do four big contracts like that?
I don't think they would, partly for, by the way you just phrased it, partly because of Correa's involvement with the Astros. You know, the 2017 stuff. It is funny because the Stanton contract really is not as burdensome as it's presented. You know, he signed a huge total deal, $325 million, but over 13 years. So the annual average value is really nowhere close to, say, Cole's. And then the Marlins are kicking in about $30 million of what the Yankees have left that they owe Stanton.
So, I mean, looking at it like that, and obviously Correa not probably going to be the option the Yankees choose, would, I mean, Trevor Story at all, you think, be a potential candidate? Or is it more of like an Angelton Simmons we could see end up being the shortstop on opening day for the Yankees?
Well, it could be either. I launched a piece this morning for our Post Sports Plus site, which is a pay site within our greater site, where I did I kind of revise my original free agent predictions. And I think Story to the Yankees makes some sense. I think the Yankees' first choice out of this remaining free agent group would be Freddie Freeman, but I think he'll wind up going back to the Braves. And then it's a matter of got to get somebody here, got to mix up this position player group somehow. And then you have a guy like Story whose track record speaks for itself. And if they can get him on a high AAV, low years deal, that could be a really good fit.
And like, what do you think that would look like? Like, I mean, 3 years, $90 million kind of would be the area.
James, I think that's pretty good. Yeah, I think you're onto something.
And then I know one guy that Jack has sort of definitely said he hopes the Yankees go after because of his nice left-handed swing might work at Yankee Stadium. But I think he also fits with the Mets a little bit, and that's Kyle Schwarber. There's the reports coming out this morning that Max Scherzer, his former teammate in Washington, sort of liked what he saw with him in those couple of months. So could you see Schwarber ending up in the Big Apple with either side?
I would say it's unlikely. When you talk about the Yankees, obviously Stanton's going to get a lot of those DH at-bats, even if he gets more outfield time. And, you know, I just think the Yankees' needs are elsewhere, center field, first base, catcher, shortstop. Schwarber can play first base, but not well. And then the Mets, you know, they're more than set at first base with Alonso and Dom Smith, as well as the outfield. And then even if the National League has a DH, I think the Mets still have the surplus there, but they have people, especially when you include the returning Robinson Cano.
I guess since you just mentioned Cano, I guess he is going to be a part of the Mets next year. They haven't cut him yet, so I guess they are planning on him having some sort of role with the team.
Yeah, they're on the record as saying that he, they help you in spring training. And Robbie Cano is very popular among his teammates. Mm-hmm. The last time Robbie Cano played, he hit well back in 2020. Of course, was then revealed that he was the reason why he hit well. But he has a career of hitting well, even when he passes his drug tests. I think bring him back. And I think there's a chance he's an asset.
Yeah. And I know, like, obviously it seems like the Mets won the offseason part one pre-lockdown. Do you see them still being active after, or is it just, Scherzer, Marte is just going to be like, we're going to ride that till opening day? Are they still in play for some of the big free agents left?
I think they'll be very active. I don't know. When you talk about the big free agents left, I mean, I guess we'll be talking about Correa, Freeman. Who else would you include? Story.
Include trade targets. I guess also you have Olsen or some of the Oakland pitching guys.
Their obvious need is pitching. They could use another starting pitcher, and they could use some bullpen help, specifically on the lefty side. That's where I see their focus going when things resume.
I guess, Jack, you did just mention Matt Olson. The A's actually have a pretty good team, I guess, when you look at them on paper, but I guess it seems like their direction tends to be towards, as soon as talent gets to be a little bit more on the expensive side, that's the, I guess, prime time for them to trade them. We saw that with Josh Donaldson a couple of years ago in that little bit of a head scratching deal when they traded him straight for Brett Lowry. I guess, do you think, I'm pretty sure that's the deal. Not 100% sure. Oh, never mind then. And then with Matt Chapman, Matt Olson, I guess they have those big three pitchers, Sean Manaea, Chris Bassett, and Frankie Montas. Do you see them, I guess, tearing it down? Maybe not all five guys going, but potentially two, maybe three of those guys in any landing in New York with the Yankees or with the Mets.
Yeah, I mean, I think one factor to keep in play is, are there going to be payroll floors, which right now is not on the table, but was earlier and could return. And if there's payroll floors, then that might compel the A's to keep some of those guys just because they're going to have to hit a minimum payroll. But if that's not the case, then yeah, I could see them really cleaning house. They let their manager, Bob Melvin, go to San Diego for nothing, for no compensation. They're clearly back in this phase of their cycle where they're going to sell off their veterans. And you ask about the New York teams, Olson is clearly a fit for the Yankees. They could use a first baseman as well as a lefty bat. And the pitchers are clearly fits for the Mets.
So you mentioned Olson has a need for first base. Does this mean Luke Voit? I mean, obviously they tried to train him at the deadline. So this means he's gone. He's done in his time with New York, or because as of right now, I'd say they have. I mean, it seems like they don't want to use DJ LeMahieu, but right now they could have one prime time first baseman and one in a fit. So you think that they're definitely moving on from Voit?
No, I don't think it's 100%, Jack. I mean, they could have really just parted ways with him by non-tendering him, but they chose to tender him a contract. So he's still under their control for 2022. So there is certainly a scenario where he is still very much in the mix. And there's also a scenario where he either gets traded or even cut in spring training.
So with this, I mean, obviously if the Yankees make a move to sign another first baseman, what do you see, or even a shortstop, what do you see happening with this like Yankees jumbled infield? I mean, obviously you have to get rid of either Torres, LeMahieu, or Urshela if you bring in a shortstop and a first baseman. So, I mean, what do you see happening with one of those guys?
Yeah, that's a really good, fair question, James. So let's break it down. So you got Voit, LeMahieu, Torres, Urshela right now. Am I leaving anyone out, or is that there?
That was the starting infield. I mean, right. Yeah, if they don't bring back Rizzo. Yeah, that was there.
Right. So that's the four guys I have right now.
Uh-huh.
Let's just say, for argument's sake, you get Rizzo and Story. Mm-hmm. So that's six for four spots. Now you've got that DH spot, which, you know, let's say Stanton can play the outfield 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. And now let's say that, what else was I going to say? I don't know. But, you know, my other point was, like, you know, if you think back to when the Yankees originally acquired DJ LeMahieu for the 2019 season, mm-hmm. he was essentially their fifth infielder, right? And yeah, he stayed healthy and other guys got hurt. I think you can, for argument's sake, those are the six. I don't know that you necessarily need to jettison any of those guys. I think it could work to have all of them mm-hmm. in the mix. I think the one issue is I guess Urshela would be your backup shortstop because you don't want Torres involved in shortstop.
Yeah.
Sounds good. We were talking. Yep, go ahead.
I was just saying, I mean, obviously LeMahieu would have to start somewhere, though, because you can't put his contract on the bench, I mean, at this point, right? I mean, wouldn't you agree?
I would 100% agree, but yeah, like, I think, you know, I think it would just, you know, worked out back in 2019, yeah. 2020, and I think
yeah.
you would just can't, or look, I mean, worst case scenario, if the 2021 DJ is the new DJ, then he should be on the bench a lot. He was pretty yeah. bad last year.
He was bad.
And obviously, as New York sports fans, we know injuries happen a lot with these teams and things tend to work themselves out naturally over spring training and all that stuff. So I guess, James, Jack, unless you guys have anything else to add about Mets, Yankees, getting shaking heads. Of course, we were talking with Tim Davidoff of the New York Post. He is also a Hall of Fame voter. So I know you don't tend to reveal your ballot until much later, so we'll skirt around that. But I know some of the bigger names this year are the two first-time eligible guys, David Ortiz, Alex Rodriguez. They're both known for their on-the-field and off-the-field potential steroid allegations with the survey testing with David Ortiz, with the A-Rod being suspended twice. How did you go about with those two guys specifically?
Well, as you said, I haven't revealed my bow yet, so I'm not going to directly answer your question, but I will discuss my history. I think some conclusions can be drawn from my history, if you see where I'm going with this. So, yeah, I have voted for Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens every year they've been on the ballot. I feel that neither of them was ever caught, neither of them any served any discipline. And I feel that far worse human beings are already in the Hall of Fame. And then when you talk about in A-Rod's case, A-Rod was caught. A-Rod did serve a sentence. He missed the entire 2014 season for his wrongdoings. I have voted for Manny Ramirez, who was caught twice and served suspensions. I have also, back in the day, I voted for Rafael Palmeiro, who was caught and suspended. So I don't think that those should be disqualifying factors.
Yeah, especially with the numbers that all those guys you just named have put up throughout their career. I'd find it hard to leave them off my ballot too, just because, I mean, guys that have hit 600 plus home runs. I mean, it's just, and Roger Clemens being a 7-time Cy Young Award winner, it's hard to leave those guys. You can't tell the story of baseball without having those guys in the Hall of Fame. That's how I see it. And I agree a lot with what you just said about how you voted in the past with all those factors.
Obviously, those guys with steroid accusations, I think, have more sound Hall of Fame cases just statistically. But I know someone you added to your ballot last year was Andy Pettit. You do think he has the full resume for being a Hall of Famer, obviously. I mean, slight Yankee bias, but I do think he does have, I mean, sub-4 ERA over a long tenure, five World Series. I think it is enough, but do you think he does have the resume to go in Cooperstown?
I voted for him, right?
Do you want to explain your reasoning at all? Or
I think you nailed it. Yeah, I mean, he's and to be clear, I think last time was the first time I voted for him, just because I had room. So there have been years when I haven't had room for him, and TBD to be revealed, I should say, on whether I had room for him this year. But yeah, I think in a vacuum, Andy Pettit is a Hall of Famer. To me, the clinching factor is his postseason record. It's just really stellar. You know, he didn't dominate per se as Curt Schilling did or John Smoltz, but he was really, really strong in the most important time of the year. And you mentioned 5 World Series championships with the Yankees, and he also helped pitch the Astros to a World Series in 2005. So yeah, I think Andy Pettit is most definitely deserving of being in the Hall of Fame.
I think that's also one of the interesting things you said, is that, like, if you have room on your ballot, obviously there have been some recent ballots where it's people vote for nobody. And that's definitely an interesting strategy, because when you look at a list of massive players, like, how can you really think not a single one of these guys is worthy of the Hall of Fame? But then there are people like yourself and a lot of other people that vote for 10 people usually and struggle with, oh, I would have voted for these guys, but I ran out of room on my ballot. Do you think 10 is a fair number, or would you go with the route of, like, oh, you can click off as many names as possible, sort of that strategy? And how would you vote for the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I understand the argument that there should be an unlimited number. And actually, we've lobbied the Hall of Fame for that. I think we actually tried to compromise and proposed increasing it from 10 to 12, and the Hall of Fame kindly declined, which I fully get, because, like, you have to, at the end of the day, the Hall of Fame is a business. You know, it's a museum with visitors and, you know, restrooms and water fountains, and it's the you know, to make it, are you guys Step Brothers fans? Will Ferrell?
Yeah.
When Adam Scott says, I got to make my nut, you know, like the Hall of Fame makes its nut on the induction day in July. Uh-huh. You know, when they have the big ceremony and the stage and the speeches, and, like, they don't want 8 people up there. You know, they want, like, 3 or 4 maximum. Like, 2 is probably ideal. You know, they want enough people there to get tens of thousands of fans to come and spend money on their businesses and buy the admission ticket. So, you know, if you had the unlimited number, okay, congratulations, 12 people made the Hall of Fame this year. It doesn't work. It doesn't work as an economic model. So I do respect the pragmatic details of that.
And I guess go for it, James.
How do you think it looks for baseball? Because I mean, right now it's kind of borderline. We could see no one get inducted into the Hall of Fame this year. I mean, how do you think that would look for the Hall of Fame, and how that would look? As baseball fans, obviously you don't want to see no one get inducted in, especially when you have Clemens and Bonds as last time on the ballot. I mean, how do you view all that?
Oh, I think it would look ridiculous. I think it would look at, and I don't think it's a coincidence. I'm sure you guys followed the ERA committees, you know, which are these smaller committees made of
six 16. Guys got in.
Six. It was six, right? Yeah. Four from one committee and two from the other. I don't know if that was a coincidence. I think they understood, whether formally told by the Hall of Fame people or not, that, the writers could put up a second straight goose egg. And we, you know, again, like, we got to make our nut. So we need to have people. We need to have Brooklyn Dodgers fans coming in for Gil Hodges, and Minnesota Twins fans coming in for Jim Cott and Tony Oliva. So I think that's why those groups elected as many as they did. You know, I follow this guy, Ryan Thibodeau, who's a terrific guy, just a terrific young man who's done amazing work with the data mining. And it's looking pretty good for Ortiz, which, you know, to be frank, I'm encouraged by. Like, I think it looks silly when we elect nobody. So one is better than zero.
Yeah.
And they were also able to hide it last year that the Derek Jeter enshrinement got postponed a year.
Exactly.
There was nobody actually elected. They still were able to have the ceremony for Derek Jeter.
What did they do, Dylan? What did they do last year with Jeter and the other guys?
Well, they had it on a random, I think it was
they Wednesday made their afternoon. Nut, Dylan.
They did. That's true.
If you had to guess, obviously, I think A-Rod has more of a shot getting in from the voters. Do you think in 10 years time? I mean, I think Bonds and Clemens have had a somewhat of an uptick. Do you think he gets in via the writers, or do you think he's also going to get denied?
I have to bet on him getting denied, Jack, just because, like, he took it a step further than Bonds and Clemens, because, as I said, neither of them was ever caught, you know, in the baseball sense. You know, they were caught by law officials. They both beat the charges, let me stress. You know, the government spent millions of dollars to try to bring both of them down and failed miserably. But, you know, A-Rod was caught. He was caught by Major League Baseball, served a year suspension. Now, what A-Rod has in his favor is the voting body, the baseball writers, keeps changing. You know, people die off and then young people get in. You have to serve your 10 years on the BBWA to get your Hall of Fame vote. And most of these younger people have been more forgiving of the steroids guys. So A-Rod does have that in his favor. But, you know, I have to, you know, ask me now in 2022, I would say A-Rod does not get it.
Sounds good, James. Jack, unless you guys have any other questions, I guess there are. Anything else you want to add about the Hall of Fame, Mets, Yankees, bold predictions, anything like that for any of you guys?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been a great talking to you.
You got it, guys, and stay safe. And we'll see if we have a season.
Sounds good. And fingers crossed we do. And the negotiations of the CBA eventually will be figured out. Fingers crossed. You can find this episode on Apple Podcast, on our website, sideretiredpod.com, on Twitter @sideretiredpod. James is also working on the Instagram, which he says will be figured out eventually. He's been working on it for 2 weeks now, which is kind of a long time to figure out how to work an Instagram page for a 19-year-old. But we're eventually going to get there. But thank you so much for joining us today and spending some time talking baseball. We greatly appreciate it.
You got it.
All right. Thank you so much. And with that, the side is retired.